Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
That document is kept with the Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission. And the law is it cannot be released to the public unless by the individual declarant or in a course of an investigation.
Liberia's parliament launches an inquiry into the leak of former President George Weah's asset declaration documents.
What we find is that support for the ruling African National Congress, which is the former party of Nelson Mandela and has governed South Africa for the past 30 years, support for that party has now fallen to quite far below the 50% mark.
A new opinion poll shows South Africa's governing African National Congress, or ANC, will lose its parliamentary majority in the coming May 29 elections.
And even when we read the list out to our officials in the far north, many of them burst out laughing because they said they could not even recognize any of those names.
And Cameroon's opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, denies media reports of mass defections from the party. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Speaker of Liberia's Parliament says the legislature has launched an inquiry into the leak of former President George Weah's asset declaration document to the public. Jonathan Fonati Kofa says it is illegal for such documents to be disclosed without the consent of the former president. Public officials are required by law, he says, to declare their assets to the Anti-Corruption Commission. His remarks come after documents containing asset declaration forms of the former president started circulating on social media. Supporters of the former president say it appears to be a move to embarrass Weah. Speaker of Parliament Jonathan Fonati Kofa tells me that officials from the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission have been summoned to appear before Parliament on Tuesday to answer questions about the leak of the document.
Public officials to file a declaration of assets. That document is kept with the Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission. And the law is it cannot be released to the public unless by the individual declarant or in a course of an investigation. All of a sudden, we see floating in the social media, President Weah's asset declaration, which he did not authorize for public consumption. And so a member of the House wrote a complaint against that, and the House has initiated an investigation in that regard.
So, Mr. Speaker, what does the investigation entail with this particular matter? Because some people are saying it appears to have been political and has national security implications.
That's correct. So the House Committee on National Security will work with the House Committee on Judiciary to ascertain the facts and circumstances from the Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission as to what happened to allow the leak of that document.
Are you saying it is illegal per the rules governing the asset declaration documents of public officials? The law frowns on it?
Yes, absolutely. You are free to publish your own asset declaration. And several people have done it. They file their asset declaration and publish it. But you cannot, the government cannot release that document without authorization of the individual declaring. And that is what happened in this case.
I understand some people have been summoned to appear before Parliament or a parliamentary committee beginning Tuesday. Talk to me about how this process goes.
Okay, so the former Liberian Anti-Corruption Commission, the LACC, the former chairman, and the current chair has been summoned before the House to explain what they know about the leak of this document. After that, the matter will be forwarded to the Committee on National Security, the Committee on Judiciary, and any other committee the House may deem fit to fully and thoroughly investigate this matter, which will include calling of witnesses.
So in the future, Mr. Speaker, will Parliament consider a measure that would make this more airtight due to what you said has national security implications to prevent future occurrences like this?
Well, as far as we're concerned, it's difficult to make this kind of bad behavior airtight. This is the first time it has occurred since we instituted this asset declaratory regime in 2010. So it's been a while we've had this regime. It has never been leaked before. This is the first time. We are hoping that this is the last time, because if we discover who the culprits are, there will be severe punishment.
What is the message here from Parliament to the public?
The message to the public is that the integrity institutions must themselves uphold their highest standard of integrity. Yes, we encourage people to publish their assets for the public to see, but it is not the purview of the custodian of the asset declaration to do so, and especially when it's done surreptitiously, in a manner and form as to suggest political motives, then we have to frown on that.
Jonathan Fonati Kofa is the Speaker of Liberia's Parliament. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. A newly released opinion poll shows South Africa's governing African National Congress, or ANC, will lose its parliamentary majority in the coming May 29 national elections. The party saw its broad national appeal sharply reduced to 37% in the polling. Conducted by the Social Research Foundation, the finding shows that the newly formed Nkonto Wisizwe, or MK party, led by former President Jacob Zuma, is attracting a lot of interest, with 13% making it the third largest party in South Africa. The Democratic Alliance, or the DA, the main opposition party, garnered 25% in the research. Franz Kronje is the chairman of the Social Research Foundation. He tells me the ANC may have to negotiate with other opposition parties in a power-sharing arrangement in order to form a government.
So some of the recent research focuses on political trends. And what we find is that support for the ruling African National Congress, which is the former party of Nelson Mandela, and has governed South Africa for the past 30 years, support for that party has now fallen to quite far below the 50% mark. And it is set to lose its majority in South Africa's parliament for the first time since the dawn of democracy, which was in 1994.
What do you think this means to the ANC one and number two, to South Africans in general?
Well, what it means at a very simple level is that South Africa's democracy is functioning exactly as intended. The country became a democracy 30 years ago when it escaped from a white minority rule in apartheid, for the reason that if a point would ever be reached again, where the country was not well governed to the advantage of a majority of its people, that those people would be able to change the government. And after the ANC first came to power with Mr. Mandela 30 years ago, there was an initial period of a decade or 15 years that saw vast improvements in basic living standards. The number of people with jobs almost doubled in the first decade and a bit after 1994. There was the rollout of the most expansive welfare program of any emerging market, and enormous successes in building housing, providing clean water, providing electricity to South Africa's people. And whilst that was happening, support for the ruling African National Congress Party in fact increased and reached a peak of almost 70%. In the election of 2004. But in the decade to today, things have changed. There's been a sharp increase in levels of corruption. Levels of economic growth have fallen to extreme lows. Real per capita GDP levels have been falling for most of the past decade. And South Africans are frustrated. And the consequence of their frustration is that support for this party is 30 years after democracy, reaching a level where the party will surrender, or very likely surrender, its national majority come the election of 29 May.
Does the newly formed MK party, backed by former President Jacob Zuma, also have anything to do with it, with the swing, the ANC particularly, to other opposition parties, including the Democratic Alliance as well?
Yeah, the party you describe, MK, that's the Mkhonto we Sizwe party. It's headed by South Africa's former head of state, Jacob Zuma. And that party has begun to poll very strongly. And in the numbers we put out last week, it was standing at about 13% of national support. Now, that data comes with a cautionary note that the party is taking off like a rocket, and its support levels must still settle. So that number's not a forecast of where it's going to end, and it could give up some percentage points still before the 29 May vote. But what sits behind the growth of that party is deep disillusionment amongst particularly Zulu-speaking South Africans, who feel that they have been abandoned and neglected by the ruling African National Congress Party. And the treatment that they believe Mr. Zuma has been meted out by that party — he was briefly jailed about 2 years ago following a series of corruption allegations. There have been attempts to try and prosecute him on other allegations and the like.
What do you think the parliament will look like? Will there be the formation of an alliance that will lead to the choosing of a new president? What do you see happening?
What's going to happen after the 29th of May is that the African National Congress and smaller opposition parties are going to enter a series of negotiations around power sharing. And at this stage, I must tell you, as someone who observes these things very closely, there have been no firm decisions taken on the nature of the post-election government. And the negotiations that are ongoing are still at a very early stage. If you press me for an answer, I would tell you now that there is a prospect of the African National Congress, if it indeed goes under 50%, calling a government of national unity, which will be an invitation to certain opposition parties to join it in government.
Frans Kronje is the chairman of the Social Research Foundation. He spoke with me from the South African capital, Pretoria, still in South Africa. A spokesperson for the Mkhonto we Sizwe Party, or MK, backed by former President Jacob Zuma, is demanding the resignation or firing of Janet Love, a leading official of the Independent Electoral Commission, or IEC. The party accuses her of bias and alleged affiliation with the governing African National Congress, or ANC. Love denies the accusation of bias. Norma Buthelezi is the spokesperson of the Mkhonto we Sizwe, or MK Party Youth League, in the KwaZulu-Natal province. She says the party has issued a one-week ultimatum for the IEC Commissioner Love to resign. This after the IEC petitioned the Constitutional Court to challenge a recent court ruling that paves the way for Zuma to compete in the coming general election. Norma Buthelezi tells me that the petition to the Constitutional Court appears to be a move to thwart the party's electoral prospect, which she contends undermines fairness of the coming polls.
The major concern that we are having with the IEC, or with the court, is that they are saying President Jacob Zuma is not going to be on the ballot. So we, as Mkhonto we Sizwe Youth League, went to do the picketing at the offices in Centurion, the IEC offices. So we went there, they welcomed us with warm hands, and then we gave them the memorandum, and then we sat down with them, and then they said no. They never said Jacob Zuma will never be on the ballot. And then later, we saw some on news going around that they're saying that Jacob Zuma is not going to be on the ballot. So the ANC then took the IEC to court, of which they, of whom they're saying they are challenging that Jacob Zuma must be on the ballot. So they went, we went to court and then we won the case. So now, so the IEC commissioner, Janet Love, then went to Concord to say, no, they are challenging this ruling. So that's the issue that we are facing at the moment. So we as Umkhonto we party, we are saying, it seems as if she's biased because she's a member of ANC in good standing. So now why is she using her powers? Just because she's an IEC commissioner, she has powers, yes. But she does. There's no need for her to be unfairly when it comes to the candidates, the presidential candidates. So we are saying that she must resign.
You've given her 7 days to resign?
Yes.
So what happens if she refuses to resign?
I believe we'll see after that. But what we are promising is that we are going to have fair elections on 29th of May. That's only what we want.
But Norma, the accusations of blatant act of bias that the MK is accusing her of, others are saying this is just a publicity stunt, just to demonize her and to paint her as an agent of the ANC to undermine the MK party. How do you respond to that?
The matter is on the news already, you know, so it cannot be that we are undermining her. We're not undermining her. She said it, she filed the complaint to Concord, and yeah, so it's not a propaganda.
Isn't this a normal judicial process? If the IEC is displeased with the ruling of a court, then, you know, you can approach the Constitutional Court for this to be adjudicated properly to ensure fairness and balance.
Yes, it is.
So why is the Umkhonto weSizwe party unhappy about this legal process that has been launched by the IEC?
Why is this being challenged? Because the matter was resolved. So why now is the matter on the process already? Because the matter was resolved. We won the case. So why now are we starting again? Are they specifically fighting with Jacob Zuma, or they are fighting with the, what do they want to see? It is not the first time when we see the person who has been jailed. Mandela was jailed for how many years? But he came out of jail and then was the president of South Africa. So what's the difference between Zuma? Zuma saved his term. Even Ramaphosa was the one who gave him pardon because he saw that he saved. He didn't undermine the court. He even now is not undermining every court cases. He's attending everything that is regarding him personally or under Umkhonto weSizwe party. We are few days close to elections. So they are trying to cause distractions to our members, to our leadership. So now they want us to lose focus. We're not going to lose focus. We are very much determined, and we need this two-thirds majority, and we are going to obtain it.
What makes you so sure that you are going to obtain it? Because the criticism is that the Umkhonto weSizwe party is only prominent in the KwaZulu-Natal province and does not have a national appeal, a broad national appeal, like other parties, including the ANC and the Democratic Alliance, do.
The fact that Umkhonto weSizwe party was approved out of all 9 provinces that we have in the South Africa, it means that we have all the members, because you know we submit signatures to the IEC. So where did we get those signatures? We got them from the people on the grounds in these provinces. So we have people on the grounds. We have leadership everywhere, all these 9 provinces. We've seen them. We went to them. We've been visiting all of them. We find the members there. We are having programs with the members. We are going to Eastern Cape this coming weekend. Eastern Cape is not KwaZulu-Natal. In Johannesburg, we are having programs anywhere, everywhere. In Cape Town, Baba was in Cape Town. In Limpopo, in Northwest, in Mpumalanga, Bloemfontein. We are having programs and we are running all over. Online provinces.
Norma Buthelezi is the spokesperson of the Umkhonto weSizwe or MK Party Youth League in the KwaZulu-Natal province. She spoke with me from Durban, South Africa.
Hi there, this is Larry London for Border Crossings, 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday. And we've got something special on Tuesdays, the Spotlight Artist of the Week. We feature a different artist Every week, we chat with them. They perform for us. It's a really cool feature. And on April 16th, on Tuesday, Brian Kay and the Parkway will join us. So make sure you're listening to VOA 1, the Voice of America, and to Border Crossings.
In Zambia, three church groups have jointly expressed concern about what they say is the harsh language the police use against citizens. The groups include the Council of Churches, the Evangelical Churches, and the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops. Their statement comes after the police summoned a Catholic priest for questioning over his preaching on social issues. Following sharp criticism from civil society and opposition groups, the police cancelled the summons. But the church groups say this is another instance where police officers undermine the constitutional guarantee of free speech. Father Emmanuel Chikoya is the General Secretary at the Council of Churches in Zambia. He tells me that foul and vulgar language against the clergy must stop.
Our concern is that there must be freedom of expression and after expression. And the religious leaders that spoke vigorously, you know, before the current government came into office and were actually a darling of them, should continue to do their role, because if we go to sleep, things could escalate and could even be worse than before. And so our interest is to ensure that the space, the civic space, the democratic space is maintained, is promoted. I know others will say we've passed the ATI, we've passed the law against defamation of the president, but ironically, we see people still being arrested using the cybersecurity law, you know. And so is it just ticking the box, or is it that there is political will to just stop these issues of arresting people in the name of insulting the president and other stakeholders? So people are challenging the very straightforward and vivid promises that were made by the current leaders. For example, load shedding. They were very emphatic that at that time we had problems because the leadership that time was clueless, it had no vision. Here they are in charge. Cholera is still an issue. Hydropower generation is still an issue. The cost of living is high. Cost of fuel has changed almost every month. So these are the issues that are being highlighted.
Critics of these church mother bodies are saying that politics is a tough sport. So if religious leaders will dabble into politics, then they should not cry foul when same is meted out to them.
When it comes to using the pulpit to preach, when you preach a contextual message, you look at Jeremiah, you look at the prophets in the Bible, they did confront issues of their time. And of course, they were not happy for doing so. They were arrested, some were persecuted and even killed. And so it's not strange that that rift is there, because people want to manage. If you manage the religious space in Zambia, you have captured a number of votes. And so whatever comes from the church is of a concern, not because people love Christianity, but they know the capacity and the number of votes that they can either gain or lose. And so when the needs of the people are being highlighted, I think the church is actually political, but not partisan. I think that is what we need to set straight. The church is political. We are in the governance. We are in the economics. We are in the health sector. We are in the social sector. So there's no sector where we are going to beg or ask for permission to be on the table. We are in there, and we must be in there. And we don't just talk the talk, but we are also into education, direct service provision, orphanages, social outreach, skills training. All those are available. And so when we are doing that work, no one is upset. No one tells us, no, leave this work to us. But when we ask questions that are critical as to why certain things are becoming a problem in terms of the quality of life and the dignity of life, then people become uncomfortable.
What do you say to those who are of the opinion that your press conference was not particularly necessary because the invitation of the priest for which you based this particular press conference on has been requested by the police? The invitation is no longer there, and priests have never been prevented from speaking out against the ills in society. Your response to that?
That's interesting. You know, people have got a way of testing the waters. In quiet, if there was no public outcry, this is not a willing, a withdrawal that was willingly done. There was a backlash, there was a public outcry. And so it comes in that context. And we wanted to register a message that we have taken note. Though it is withdrawn, actually, the lawyers that were representing the priest still wrote, because as far as they were concerned, there was no written communication. There was just a posting and an address. And if you don't appear, on technical basis, they can take you on, that you ignore the call out, because he received a hard copy of a call out. He never got a hard copy of a letter communicating that the call out had been withdrawn. And so in legal matters, these may appear okay to the general public and ordinary mind, but these are issues that you make sure. And I think, the best of my knowledge, I think they may have gone to still ensure that they are on the safer side.
Father Emmanuel Chikuya is the General Secretary at the Council of Churches in Zambia. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Cameroon, the opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, is denying media reports of mass defections from the group to the newly formed Front for Change in Cameroon, or FCC. The party says the reports appear to be a calculated attempt to undermine the party's effort to garner popular support in next year's presidential election. This after local media reports of mass defections. The defectors, the reports say, cited the lack of a charismatic leader. They also criticized the refusal of the party to join a political alliance to defeat the ruling party led by longtime President Paul Biya. The 91-year-old Biya is expected to seek re-election. Richard Indifo is the SDF Secretary General for Political Education and Training. He tells me the party has evolved and is using new measures to boost its chances to win next year's presidential vote.
When we saw that information, we were actually having a meeting with officials, district and cells and ward chairpersons. When we presented that to the regional chairperson of the South of the Far North, he himself was amazed because he did not recognize most of the names on that list. And even when we read the list out to our officials in the Far North, many of them burst out laughing because they said they could not even recognize any of those names. So what I can say is that those are fabricated documents made by people who think that they can only survive by smearing the SDF. And the timing of that document can see that it was done just at the time we were in the Far North, and the mobilization we got out there got some people frightened, and probably they have to come out with something like that to manipulate public opinion.
But there have been concerns that since the founder, John Fruindi, passed away, there hasn't been a charismatic leader that will galvanize the party and make the party attractive to the entire country to garner support for the next general election, presidential election next year. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't know what they mean by charismatic leader. We have a young and dynamic leader in the person of Joshua Osei. And the SDF has started up with a new strategy. You understand that a lot of people feel that we should remain stuck in the 1990s approach. And we think that the SDF has to evolve. This time around, we started off by holding town hall meetings rather than going in for large rallies. And the reason for that is because we believe that these are smaller, more intimate gatherings where we will have the opportunity to directly engage with smaller group of voters. And it provides us with an opportunity to address the concerns and questions of attendees. Now, this is just the first phase of it, because our goal is first of all to touch base with the voters, with the militants of the party at the base, to understand what is it that's their concern, so that we can incorporate all of this in our manifesto, then before we can now come out to have the kind of large rallies that I'm sure some people are excited and expecting to see.
What do you say to those who are of the opinion that the SDS refusal to join what is now becoming the Popular Political Alliance for Change, APC, which they said will give the opposition, including the SDF, the best chance to challenge the dominance of the CPDM led by President Paul Biya, the reason why the party appears unattractive to a lot of them?
To the best of my knowledge, the so-called Alliance for Progressive Change came about at the conference of the MRC political party. And at that convention, they simply declared a certain candidate as the unique candidate. And they asked all other political parties, opposition parties, to just line up behind him. And we do not think that that is the best way for a coalition to be formed. The SDS is not opposed to the idea of political parties, opposition parties, coming together to create a stronger force to challenge the current regime. But that should be done through some kind of negotiation.
What do you think the chances of the SDF are ahead of next year's election?
Well, I think, like I told you, we are on the field, we are on the ground, we are mobilizing. And what we are seeing in this field is a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement. We were in the far north a couple of days ago. We moved down to the northern region in Garoua, and then we came down to Ngaoundere in the Adamawa region. And we've been talking to voters, we've been talking to members of the party, and what we get is a lot of excitement. And I think I'm very, very positive in the forthcoming election. But like I said, the SDF is not opposed to coalition. The SDF is still open. Our doors are open. If we think that we want to do a coalition and do it in the proper manner in which a coalition should be done, then we are open to do that.
Richard Indifo is the SDF Secretary General for Political Education and Training. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. Still in Cameroon, a government-run school in the capital is teaching students how to manufacture plant-based meat, an innovation which the school's director hopes will contribute to the fight against climate change. For VOA, Anne Nzuonkel has more from Yaoundé in this report narrated by Moki Edwin Kenzeka.
On this day at the Women's Training Center of Yaoundé 6, students and their guests are eating soy meat, a vegetable-based product. It was made on site by Marie-Noël Abena, the director of the government-run vocational school. Abena says if a part of the population consumes plant-based meats produced from soy, it will contribute in our way to the fight against climate change. Scientists say the production of meat, especially beef, is a big driver of global warming. Cows produce methane, a potent greenhouse gas, and when forests are cleared to make way for grazing land, carbon dioxide is released into the air. To combat the problem, Abena decided to teach the manufacture of soy-based meat. It begins with clearing and washing the soy beans. Abena and the students create a soy paste and add ingredients like carrots and parsley and other vegetables. Through the process, students also learn about the nutritional benefits of plant-based meat. Clementine Guinea says that learning how to make soy meat will allow me to help people who naturally do not eat animal meat. They'll have the option to eat soy meat, which is said to have several nutrients. The soy paste is left to rest for about an hour and can then be cooked like any other meat. Officials with the Ministry of Environment took the benefits.
Ce qui est important ici, c'est de limiter les émissions. C'est ça l'objectif final.
Christophe Bring is with the Cameroonian Ministry of Environment, Nature Protection and Sustainable Development. He says what is important is to limit emissions. This is one of the credos of the fight against climate change. He says it is necessary to make the comparison between what the meat production process brings in terms of carbon footprint and what soy considered as an alternative could also impact in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. Climate scientists say eating more plants and fewer animals is among the simplest, cheapest, and most readily available ways for people to reduce their impact on the environment. As for the soy meat products, they have found an audience in Yaoundé. Until now, people have bought soya to make porridge for babies. Now, plant-based meat is becoming part of local eating habits. For Anne Zwanke in Yaoundé, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Angola Minister of Youth and Sport, Rui Falcao, on Saturday ruled out the possibility of Angola hosting the Africa Football Championships in 2029. He stated that the country's current priority is the celebration of 50 years of national independence scheduled for 2025. The sport minister spoke shortly after the president of the Confederation of African Football, Patrice Motsepe, visited President Yao Lorencao in the state house. The sports minister, however, said everything will be done to ensure Angola qualify for the next Africa Cup of Nations and, if possible, reach the finals. President of the Confederation of African Football, Patrice Motsepe, told journalists that the continent's football body is determined to unite the Spanish, Portuguese-speaking members and bring them up to par with their French and English-speaking counterparts.
My visit of the last few days visiting mainly the Portuguese-speaking countries in CAF. And I also went to, had a meeting with the head of state of Guinea Equatorial, because they are Spanish speaking, and the aim was to make sure that the Portuguese speaking countries in Africa, including the one Spanish speaking country, Guinea Equatorial, that their views and their interests are significantly highlighted and promoted within Africa.
In volleyball news, the 45th Men's African Volleyball Club Championship begins on Sunday in Egypt following the draws which were conducted. A total of 21 clubs are participating in the championship and have been divided into four groups. The top four teams of each of the four groups will qualify for the second round. In athletics, Kenya's Hellen Obiri and Evans Chebet will defend their Boston Marathon titles against formidable fields at the World Athletics Platinum Liberia Road Race on Monday. Obiri, the only woman in history to have won senior world titles indoors, outdoors, and at cross-country, made her marathon debut in New York in 2022, clocking 2 hours, 25 minutes, 49 seconds, a time that remains her official personal best. Hellen Obiri is one of the four past Boston winners who will take on the star line in the women's race alongside two-time champion Edna Kiplagat, 2015 winner Caroline Rotich, and 2018 victor Desiree Linden. In table tennis news, the Togo Table Tennis Federation is hosting a tour tagged the Lomé Ping Pong Tour across seven local communities. The tour aims to engage fans by inviting them to play while also raising awareness about the upcoming 2024 West African Table Tennis Regionals that gathers the best players from the West African sub-region. Elsewhere in Uganda, four national table tennis players have qualified for the Africa Cup, which is set to take place from May 10th to the 16th in Kigali, Rwanda. This comes after the one-day qualification tournament played at the Lugogo Indoor Stadium. And finally, in boxing news, the International Boxing Association, IBA, will on Monday host many renowned boxers for the African Mandela Cup, which will feature many renowned boxers and a substantial prize fund of $500,000. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As we approach the November 29th elections in South Africa, we are beginning to discern lots of confusion. At the beginning of last week, there were reports that the Supreme Court of South Africa had overturned the ruling of the Electoral Commission that former President Zuma should not participate in the voting. Zuma himself was very pleased with the report and perhaps misspoke when he said he was happy to be able to rule South Africa once again. But by Friday last week, there were other reports that the matter of Zuma's full participation was being referred to the Constitutional Court. And as all observers will note, Zuma has had a stroke of bad luck with the Constitutional Court in South Africa. But it is necessary for a decision to be made because this would enable the Electoral Commission to prepare the final list for the voting itself. One might ask, why is it so important for Zuma to participate in the vote? Because in the view of some, he cannot become president for a third term. The main factor is that South Africa uses the proportional system. And under the proportional system, each party prepares a list of its candidates. And the ranking of that list is vitally important for each party because it may enable them to garner a larger majority from the electorate. Next issue which has been dominating South African politics is the rumor or allegation that Russia is spreading fake news in the media to enhance the chances of the ANC. Now, this is not new for keen observers of elections in the United States or even in Europe. The same allegations are being made that Russia is spreading fake news in the U.S. election, and likewise that Russia is spreading fake news in Europe prior to the European election coming soon. The question that should be kept in mind is that these things are part of what is called dirty tricks in elections, known very well in the United States, and also familiar to those who understand regime change playbook. And these things could be countered successfully by the Electoral Commission and the political parties themselves. This could be done by rigid voter education so that voters could be aware of what is going on. This should not detract from the need to closely follow the election because, as has been said often, this election in South Africa in May might be a game changer. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from our collection.
For you, like you got a job to do, just want you to raise. If it's near or far, listen, here we are. I need you. I've always wanted what was off limits. Staring at you till I'm caught in this. Back and forth like this was all tennis. I'm all jealous. You came with someone, but we can tell that there's changes coming. See, I can tell that you're a dangerous woman. That means you're speaking my language. Come on, now follow me, let's go. Like Penelope and Blow. Well aware that stealing you is a felony, yeah, I know. That's why they keep on telling me to let go, yeah. But I need you and I can take you all the way, and I'm able to give you something sensational, so let's go, yeah. Said I need you and I can take you all the way, and I'm able to follow me and I can make you.
Always on my mind. You know I had it rough, trying to forget you. But the more that I look around, the more I realize you're all I'm looking for. What makes you so beautiful? You don't know how beautiful you are to me. You're not trying to be perfect. Nobody's perfect but you are. To me, how you take my breath away, feel the words that I don't say. I wish somehow I could say them now. Oh, I could say them now, yeah.
Just friends, the beginning or the end. How do we make sense when we're on our own? It's like you're the other half of me. I feel incomplete. Should have known. Nothing in the world compares to the feelings that we share. It's so not fair. What makes you so beautiful is you don't know how beautiful you are. Trying to be perfect, nobody's perfect but you are. To me,
forget it's destiny, but it hurts like hell. Hope it's not too late, just a twist of fate. Yeah. What makes you so beautiful is you don't know how beautiful you are to me. You're not trying to be perfect, nobody's perfect but you are. Somehow I can say them now. Oh, I can say them now.
For all the times that you rain on my parade, and all the clubs you get in using my name. You think you broke my heart, oh girl, for goodness sake. You think I'm crying on my own, well I ain't. And I didn't wanna write a song, cause I didn't want anyone thinking I still care or don't. But you still hit my phone up, and baby I'll be moving on. And I think it should be something I don't wanna hold back. Maybe you should know that my mama don't like you, and she likes everyone. And I never liked to admit that I was wrong. And I've been so caught up in my job, didn't see what's going on. But now I know I'm better sleeping on my own. Cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go and love yourself. And if you think that I'm still holding on to something, you should go and love yourself. When you told me that you hated my friends, the only problem was with you and not them. And every time you told me my opinion was wrong, and tried to make me forget where I came from. And I didn't wanna write a song, cause I didn't want anyone thinking I still care or don't. But you still hit my phone up, and baby I'll be moving on. And I think it should be something I don't wanna hold back. Maybe you should know that my mama don't like you, and she likes everyone. And I never liked to admit that I was wrong. And I've been so caught up in my job, didn't see what's going on. But now I know I'm better sleeping on my own. Cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go and love yourself. And if you think that I'm...
Who you a fool for this?
Oh Lord, Jesse made another one.
And that was our Sunday music spot. You hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
The first play on my body in them. I just check my balance, I'll probably pull up to your hood and come buy me a new. No cap.
You know, Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwain, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, a deer teethed with a golden chain will escape to the forest to eat grass. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
No talking, I don't like to argue. I don't. Ain't gonna be no more laughing. You see me whip out, cause I'm gonna be the shot mirror. No cap. I don't follow no on IG, but all of your they following. Ha. And that little ain't gonna shoot with that gun. He just pull it out in his picture. Ha, ha, ha. Packing the mail, it's gone. She like I smell cologne. Yeah. I just signed a deal, I'm on. Yeah, yeah. I go where I want, good.